Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Want him to get no punch. Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live. I'm Paul Dottino, along with Roman Oben. We are presented by DraftKings.com. And I'll tell you what, we got a rainy, miserable day here at the Quest facility. It's kind of like Seattle weather has already hit New Jersey. I don't know, Roman. They're saying 60% chance of rain on Sunday in Seattle, and there's no roof on that place.
Well, if it quiets the 12th man and slows down that Seattle attack, maybe that's a good thing for the Giants on Sunday.
I don't know, but I'll tell you what, it's not a good thing, this injury report. Before we go anywhere, let's get through the Giants injury report from yesterday. Now, the Giants just hit the practice field today inside the field house here at the Quest Center. Rashad Jennings, Mathias Kiwanuka, Weston Richburg, and Steve Weatherford did not work. Jennings, Kiwi, and Richburg, Jennings and Kiwi with knees, Richburg with an ankle. Weatherford, of course, with the maintenance on his ankle, also now with a sore back apparently. Limited yesterday, Jenkins with a calf, DRC with his back and his hamstring. That's nothing new. And Preston Parker was in full. He left the game the other day against the Colts with a sprained ankle.
Well, it's not the greatest injury report we've seen.
No.
I mean, it's doubled.
It's growing a little bit.
And obviously, we talked, everyone knows the news about Prince Mukamura being out. And the secondary being affected because of that. But in terms of Rashard Jennings, it seems like his knee is a lot worse than you thought. Now it's been a month using MCLs.
2 to 4 weeks.
Yeah, 2 to 4 weeks. Now you're at the high end of that number. Kiwi with a knee. I know, you know, he's a veteran. He's a tough guy. He's going to try to play it out. Will that plane ride, that 5.5-hour plane ride, make a difference in terms of swelling of the joints and things like that? Because they do go out a day before the game, as you know. We'll see on Saturday. So some of these might be game day. And again, Weston Richburg, we know about his ankle. And Weatherford, that was a new injury. So it's really all hands on deck. And anyone that can go, they're going to have to play. I mean, this is a game where you need everyone, every healthy, able body. And Paul, as you know, having had lost 3 games in a row, the Giants haven't really put themselves in the position where you can't lose another game until you're on the plus side of 500.
All right, so let's talk about the one injury situation that could be rectified with a switch in the starting lineup, because the Giants do have a body coming back in Jeff Schwartz from the dislocated toe. He started practicing after missing the first half of the season last Wednesday. Now, he was limited, Roman. I don't know how much he's going to be able to do this week. I guess what I ask you is, as an offensive lineman, how much work does he need to shake off the rust of inactivity for the first half of the season to realistically give you X number of snaps if they decide that he's got to go in for Richburg? Or are they better off just putting Adam Snyder in, who played the second half against the Colts, the former 49er veteran?
Well, as long as Schwartz has been taking mental reps, he's been watching film, the rehab process, you know, when you have an injury, you're coming back to play football. You're not rehabbing for, you know, for daily activity. Driving, sitting down, going to the bathroom. I mean, you're getting ready for football. So I have to assume in terms of the weight room, in terms of his conditioning, his running, those things have enabled him to come back to just doing football stuff now. And from a football standpoint, it's just about getting in game shape. And I would imagine if he's anywhere close to whatever that number is, 80%, 90%, as long as it doesn't hold him back, he should be able to play.
And you would consider him for the starting lineup then?
Well,
because that means potentially 65 snaps. As you know, that's the average offensive number of snaps you'll get in a game.
I would dress him. I would say he would have to dress this week. Now, whether he's sprinkled in as a goal line tight end or he's sprinkled in some other fashion, field goal, extra point, just at least getting some type of physicality.
So based on what you're saying, if Richburg can't go, and again, we don't know that. We're told it was not as bad of an ankle sprain as you thought when he left the game. You would be more inclined to perhaps put Snyder in to start if Richburg can't go.
Right, put Snyder in to start and maybe put Schwartz in, dress him, but only use him in an emergency capacity, but definitely field goal, extra point, maybe goal line, tight end, things like that.
All right, let's get to our phone lines, and we'll start with Drew from Virginia, You're first on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hello.
Hey, Paul. Hey,
Hi.
Roman. How you guys doing, man?
Good.
It's raining, man. We're not doing so good.
It's
miserable out.
Yeah, it's raining
out.
Here, too, in Virginia. Hey, man, I got a question for you, man. I'm going to try to make this simple. I called in Monday, man, and I had said that, you know, I felt like this team doesn't have the talent, which I still do, you know, and I know we have a ton of injuries, which leads me to my question. I had called in and I had said that, you know, Jerry Reese can't continue to shop at the dollar store. And, you know, of course, Lance and them was like, well, you know, he made these number of picks. And that's all well and dandy. But here's my point, okay? You know, for quite a few years, okay, the Giants have been suffering injuries. Now, we know the NFL suffers injuries. All teams go through injuries. I get that and everything. But here's my point, okay? It seemed like, you know, when we lose, you know, starters or whatever, the backups or the people that's there, to, you know, to back up these players, you know, it seemed like they're like C or D rated. And my point is, man, you know, don't you think we need to get some better backups? Because right now, man, it's already shown and proven that, you know, once we lose a starter, this team is at a severe disadvantage. And so that's what I meant when I said Jerry can't continue to shop at the dollar store, Paul.
Well, Drew, let me just say this. Let me just say this. Look at some of the – and I'm going to pull up these numbers here because I don't want to quote them out of the blue. I want to be very, very specific and accurate when I talk to you.
All right.
Some of the cap numbers this year. Cullen Jenkins, 3.2. They spent some money for him. Stevie Brown, coming off of the ACL last year, 2.75 mil. That's a pretty good buck, you know, for a guy who had eight picks the year before he got hurt. So they spent some money there to go after a player who had produced. Some other guys, J.D. Walton's getting $2 million. That's not necessarily a terrible number, again, for a guy who was coming off of an injury. So Jameel McClain, $1.8 million. These guys are not dollar store players, okay? So I think, you know, Rashad Jennings, $1.3 million cap number this year. DRC, $2.75 million. And, of course, these cap numbers are all a little low because of the way they graded the contracts. But those are just cap numbers. So what I'm saying is, they're not dollar store guys. So I guess what I appreciate the fact that I think you're right, that the Giants do not have enough depth up and down the roster to be able to withstand these kinds of injuries and to stay in the playoff race. I agree with that
statement. And that's what I'm saying, Paul.
But what you can't do is base that statement on dollar store acquisitions. They also spent big money for Walter Thurmond. I don't see him right here on the list because I'm not sure how the money was divvied up. But Walter Thurmond was another pretty expensive acquisition.
Right.
So you can't give me that premise. I will not accept that. I'm sorry. But what I will accept is the fact that the roster is not great.
Right.
Right. But let me make a point, Paul.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I'm not okay. You're right about, you know, these are our starters, okay, and you're right. I can't argue that point, okay. You're right about that. I guess what I'm saying, man, is our backup players, okay, because again, you know, I'm looking at the fact that we are continuously hurt. It just seems like the Giants is hurt more than other teams. And again, I understand all teams go through injuries, Paul. I understand that, but it just seems that we, for some odd reason, we get the injury bug the worst. And what I'm saying, man, is it seemed like when we get an injury and we put in a replacement, he's not near the caliber of the starters.
Well, Drew,
and that's what I'm saying.
Drew, you know, and again, I'm not discounting what you're saying because there is certainly some validity to what you're saying. But there's also a reason, too. Now, remember, Roman, last year this Giants team, and we'll keep you on the line for a second, Drew, because maybe you have another response here. But this Giants team finished 7-9 last year.
Right.
They knew that there had to be changes. So they overhauled 45% of the roster.
Right.
And they did buy a bunch of free agents, veterans who had been to the playoffs before.
Right.
Half a dozen of these guys had been to a Super Bowl. So they had a really good strategy in terms of bringing in winners. Here's my point to you, though, Drew. You only have X number of dollars and X number of spots. How many more guys on the roster did you want to turn over? You turned over 45% of the roster in 1 year, and you're telling me that was not enough depth. Well, you know why? Because you can't turn over 80% of the roster in 1 year. You can't do it.
Right. 40% is a pretty high number.
I understand that, Paul.
Right?
For, it's, 40% is a pretty high number, right, Drew, for a team that doesn't typically go that aggressively in free agency.
And let's not forget the guys left on the team. A lot of those guys had money and guaranteed salaries and stuff. You just can't throw them in the garbage. You can't do it.
Yeah.
I understand that, Paul, and Roman and Paul. I understand that point, okay? And I'm just saying it's kind of frustrating because, again, it just seems like the players that come in, the sub for the starters that's getting hurt, can't get the job done, and it's just frustrating. Yes, there is no easy answer, and that's why I asked the question, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, Drew, thank you. Roman, let me ask you this.
Sure.
It seems to me that if you really want to point the fingers anywhere about the lack of depth of the guys being able to step up in light of all the injuries and so forth, those are the kinds of guys you have to have groomed through the draft.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, the guys that come in, your middle round, late round picks, I mean, the guys that go through special teams, those guys, by their second, third year, they should be contributing. You're sprinkling them with free agents. I mean, that's been the Giants' philosophy for years. But in terms of, you know, roster depth, roster integrity, everyone would like to keep all their guys. If you keep eight linebackers on the roster, you want all of them to be healthy. If you keep eight, seven DBs, six linemen, running backs. The injury bugs affected everyone. And I talked about this yesterday. To me, it's about injuries at those key positions. Quarterback, cornerback, left tackle, right defensive end, some of the special teams injuries. I mean, so outside of those core injuries, I mean, the Giants have been very fortunate that, now, with the exception of Princeton Mukamara, it's a cornerback, right cornerback. That's a big injury.
Well, quite frankly, so was Thurmond. Because he was going to be
the slot
corner,
guy, right.
And McBride was the next man up. So three of their top four corners are gone for the season.
John Beason, I think that's an injury that,
no
that
question.
That's hurt the team. And I said this last year. No, I think it was at the end of the 2012 season. I said this, that it's always great to see the stories of a guy that comes in off the street, you know, a Preston Parker or a Larry Donnell. We always love those type of stories, but the guys that are paid to get the job done, the guys with the Wheaties commercials, if you will, the guys who are really heavy on the cap, those guys have to lead the charge. Cruz's injury affected the morale, I think, of the offense more so than anything else. But prior to his injury, he had drops. He had some issues. There was some ball. He didn't get targeted, I think, one of the first two games. He didn't get targeted at all. Right. So the guys who lead the charge should be playing well, and the other guys underneath them should continue to come up. Look, Preston Parker had a lot of drops. I mean, there was a lot of criticism on the show yesterday about that, and everyone's saying Coy Webster should come back and should at least get more playing time.
Washington.
I'm sorry, yeah, Coy Webster. Coy Washington should get more playing time.
Corey Webster's retired.
Yeah, which I understand, but football is never about getting one guy the football. It's about maximizing the roster you have, taking the guys that are supposed to get it done, and hoping that they – or at least trusting that they get the job done, a la Reuben Randall, a la the offensive lineman, Jerry, at guard. I mean, those guys have to play well. Because if they don't, you're talking about what's wrong with the roster. Because every team has a Preston Parker or a Adrian Robinson or a offensive lineman.
Or like James Burrow.
James Burrow. Every team has guys like that. And you develop those guys through the draft, or you keep those guys on the roster because you're still developing them into starters, into contributors eventually. This team is not 3-5 because Preston Parker dropped balls or because you've got too many backups starting. I mean, they're 3-5 because they're not executing.
Oh, there's no doubt.
And when you
they're just not playing well.
When you break the huddle, it's not about the coordinator. It's not about the play calling. It's about the guys in the huddle saying, we're going to make this work no matter what.
Harry Carson just told us in our pre-production meeting for the MSG First and Ten show that Roman and I are both a part of. He was asked, what is it that you need to see from this team right now? And he said, I want every guy to ask himself, did I do everything that I could do to help this team win when that game is over? And if you were to get an honest answer from a lot of the Giants the other night against the Colts, the answer would have to be no.
Yeah. Did I concentrate? Did I focus? Did I say, I'm the guy that's going to make the play? I'm the guy that's going to stop this third down. Those things, and it's not about what they said or didn't say, what we can speculate, but the results of what you put on tape show that
tape doesn't lie.
Yeah, tape doesn't lie.
Dan Reeves used to tell us that all the time. 939-4, 201. 239-4513. Don't want to forget that 201 New Jersey area code. Let's go to Andrew from New Jersey, and you are next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hello.
Hey, what's up, guys? I have my other Andrew, three in a row. My dad is here, too. I wanted to say I'm glad you guys are on today, Roman, because offensive line, I wanted to talk about the running game.
Thank you.
Paul can return kicks. I can play wide out and corner. But more importantly, Roman, if you take the headsets off and put the football helmet on, I think they need you on the offensive line.
I don't know if this helmet fits or not, but we'll see. Go ahead.
What I wanted to say is that when I spoke first on the show with Paul, it was last year before the draft, and I said, you know, Pugh is a good player, but I always thought the Giants' key was that they need elite offensive linemen, dominant, and that they should trade up and pick one of the top two or three that were rated ahead of Pugh. And I just wanted to ask you if you know Fluker or Fluke, whatever his name is, and how they're doing. And if you agree, because we would have lost a pick and maybe not had DeMontre Moore or someone. But think that would have been the right thing to do? And Hillis, I want more Hillis. And I'll put my dad on, but I'll listen to your answer.
All right, first off, I'll let you talk about Hillis. DJ Fluker was taken by the Chargers much earlier than the Giants were hoping because, quite frankly, he was number one on my Giants draft board.
Right.
And I'm going to give out a little secret here. The Giants would love to have had DJ Fluker. Okay, the problem was he didn't drop far enough to where they could do what they needed to do to go get him. Okay, they were on the same page as I was. It does happen sometimes.
Yeah, it does.
And they just could not go up and get him. He was taken too early by the Chargers. Has he played? Yes. Has he played well? Yes. Has he made some young mistakes last year as a rookie? And now he also had a knee injury for a little while, kind of hurt him a tad. But he's the starting right tackle for the Chargers, and he's doing fine. And quite frankly, I would have loved to have had him here. But again, they just could not get up high enough to go get him. Trust me when I tell you, though, he was a guy they were very, very interested in. Zach Martin was the guy I targeted this year.
Right.
And quite frankly, had Beckham not been there, Zach Martin would have been the pick. Okay?
Okay. That's it. They hung up on me.
Yeah. Excuse me?
Here's the...
Hello?
We're having an issue.
I'm sorry. We're having trouble with the phones. We're going to let that go, John. I don't know what happened there. But in any event, in dealing with the offensive line, Roman, the Giants were happy to get Justin Pugh. He's a guy that I had targeted for them in the second round, believe it or not, last season. And really what it came down to was this. They knew they needed a guy who could compete as the starting right tackle against David Deal, who was on his last legs.
Right.
Justin Pugh, at the time they selected, even though, and I think a lot of people believe this, Justin Pugh would be a better guard. We've talked about this before. I know you don't always necessarily agree with that. But Pugh was the only guy left on the board at that time
right.
who had an opportunity, skill set-wise, to project as a rookie starting right tackle, somebody who could at least give Deal a run for his money and potentially help fill that hole.
Right.
And so he had to be the pick at that point. And I commend the Giants for taking Justin Pugh when they did last year in the bottom of that first round, because after that, there was a significant drop-off in offensive linemen, specifically at tackle, and they desperately needed somebody. So that was a good pick. Good value, but even more need. So I'm glad they got him.
Yeah, and I think Justin Pugh could be a solid right guard. I mean, he's still an ascending player. I mean, he started now, you know, a year and a half straight. What would that be, 22 games?
Yeah, he's
or so.
Been nicked up some. He's been inconsistent some, and he had the bad game against Philly, which everybody wants to hang on his hat.
Right.
What are you going to do?
But as a young player, you've got to go through that process. And I think the only...
Growing pains, they call it.
Yep. Because I've been there. I mean, we've all been there. And in terms of playing guard, I think he'd be a good left guard versus right guard, because that's the zone, the backside. I mean, he's not a big guy. He's only about 305, 310 tops.
Right.
Probably closer to 305, 300.
He's got to get a little more beef on him.
Yeah. So and obviously, shorter arms helps him at the guard playing inside versus
right.
having to block those longer, taller defensive ends, but. I think Justin Pugh is. I think he's got his work cut out for him in that crowd noise on Sunday afternoon with the 12th man.
Yeah, it's a
very
difficult place to play. And if you get in those third and longs, like they did the other day against the Colts, you got a big problem. And if you get behind in
Seattle. And that was at home. That was at home. On the road in that dome with the rain.
Well, not a dome.
In that noise, that aluminum thing they have.
You know what I wonder? How many people know this? I'm going to tell you something. The Giants don't play Seattle that often, so maybe a lot of Giants fans don't know this. When they built what is now called CenturyLink Field, it was called the Quest when they first opened it some years ago. They actually went to an acoustic engineer, and they asked him about, okay, this is what we're looking at. This is the kind of structure we want. How can we make this building sound as loud as possible? So they like these folks who do concert acoustic engineering, they asked this guy to help them design a football stadium that would maximize the crowd volume.
Right.
And it works, Roman. Right. I'll tell you that. It works.
Yeah. It's a very, very loud stadium. I've been there several times. And when it's not even that full, it's pretty loud. And it's especially loud when you're inside, you're backed up inside the 20-yard line. You know, one of my keys this week is just starting fast. I mean, the Giants have to start fast. Unlike the Colts game when you're at home, you can't continuously punt or be in third down situations backed up in your own end zone in the 10, 20-yard line. You've got to get to the middle of the field and obviously try to score or kick a field goal, but punt away and make them backed up.
Yeah.
You don't. The crowd noise does not work to your favor when you're backed up and you're in your side of the ball.
Listeners are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site where it's like a new season every time you play. Hurry and get a free entry to the $100,000 fantasy football contest this weekend where first place takes home $10,000. Head to DraftKings.com now and enter code BLUE to play for free. DraftKings.com, bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter BLUE for a free entry now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. And we thank them for their participation. Stas from Washington, you are next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hello. How are you, Stas?
Hey. Good. So three quick hitters. One, I will be at that Seahawks game, and I'll be the loudest fan in that stadium cheering my boys on.
Are you going to be wearing a blue Giants jersey, though?
I am going to be blue from head to toe.
There you go. You're a good fan.
I'm representing. It's a great field to go to. It's a great stadium. I've been to a few games there. It's going to be a good time.
Okay.
Secondly, I really hope Corey Washington does get some significant more playing time because I've noticed the teams that give the Seahawks, and I have to see every Seahawks team living out here. The team that gives the Seahawks the hardest time, they do one of two things. They're able to run or they spread them out. And if we could do that, I think, you know, one of the two, I think we honestly have a chance because the Seahawks ain't as explosive as they used to be. Watching their games, they're not putting up points. It's not like we're dealing with another Colts team that's going to drop 40 points at any given moment. And lastly, here's a question for you guys. I'm not one to – I don't believe that you have to go out and sign a bunch of free agents every year to be competitive. I believe in building a draft, and that's the Giants' way. But I'll take your answer off the air. I noticed that teams like the Patriots, for example, they always have all these extra picks in the draft. They're always willing to trade a big name to get extra picks in the draft every year. And the Giants never do. Is there a reasoning behind that? Is it just something like Jerry Reese says – just doesn't like to do, and like I said, I'll take that answer off air. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Thank you, Stas. I mean, we spoke about this a few minutes ago. Jerry Reese and whether it's Jerry Reese, Ernie Accorsi, George Young, never built teams on being super aggressive in free agency. I mean, they're always signing a guy or two here and there, but typically, you talk about this roster being turnover 45%. Typically, you'll have at least, at the very least, a 15% roster over up to 25.
I was going to say about 20 is usually the Giants' number when they don't do that well.
Yeah,
six
of those being rookies, draft picks, and then maybe, again, two or three free agents that you sprinkle in. And then some guys you get, you know, one-year guys, one-year contracts, veteran minimum guys. So in terms of the draft, I mean, that's how they built their what was the other question that he asked?
He was asking about the Seahawks offense, saying it's all not that explosive. And quite frankly, he's right. They're not 5-3 because of their offense.
No, I mean, Doug Baldwin is their best receiver. You and I talked about
yesterday. Percy Harvin's now on the Jets.
Percy Harvin was traded away for some more draft picks. The Giants, and again, the Giants never have a big cap unfriendly guy that they can trade away for draft picks. I mean, that's just never how they've gotten it done. And I think the most recent thing I can remember is the Eli Manning trade, which I was a part of,
right.
which sent me to San Diego from Tampa. But no, the Giants have typically not been a team that does that.
They've always had the belief, and this goes back to George Young,
right.
that your draft picks are extremely important to you,
right.
Not only valuable to you, but what are you doing with your scouts all year? You send these guys everywhere. They miss their families. They miss meals. They're going absolutely bonkers, pulling their hair out, trying to find talent for your team.
Right.
And so they deserve the opportunity to have their say. And on draft day, we want to give them, this is, the Giants' philosophy, we want to give them the opportunity to use their skills, their knowledge, their time, their effort, their blood, their sweat, their tears, and we want to be able to translate that into picks. And if we trade picks, and this was one thing I remember Ernie Accorsi saying, when you trade your first-round pick, you demoralize your entire personnel department.
Yeah,
because they've worked their butts off all year long to try to bring you the information to go get somebody, and then all of a sudden, what? We don't have the pick? What do we do? And with the first rounder in particular, Ernie used to say, I can't rip the guts out of my scouting staff like that.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Eli from Indianapolis, how about that? You're next on the show.
Hey,
hello.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hi.
Hey, I think I forgot what his name was. A couple calls back, but he was explaining how we get injured so easily. But, no, I know it's the NFL. Every team gets injured. But, man, we get injured every single game. Like, I'm scared for us to play a game again because I'm scared someone else will get hurt. I was just thinking, we have, really no corners left. We didn't have DRC. I think it's time for DRC to, man up now and not, say he's hurt. I know he's injured, but, he should know. I think it's time for him to man up. He's like, no, whatever.
Wait a minute. I gotta get you a little T.O. right here. You know why? DRC is a gamer. He's breaking his butt trying to get out there every week.
Yeah.
And the truth of the matter is, even a few weeks ago when he went out there in Dallas and played some snaps, he probably shouldn't have played. But he's out there giving his all. And even
100%.
When he's – the other day, I'll give you a story. 2 weeks ago, the trainers wanted to see if they could give him I guess it was a Friday practice, wanted to give him off and said, take another day. No, he said, I don't want it. I want to get out there. I need to get out there with the team. And he went out there, and he didn't do much, but he was out there. And he believed that that was important because he fully intended on playing Sunday. He had in his mind, they're not shutting me down.
Right.
And if I let them shut me down at practice, that's already 1 foot closer to not playing in the game. That's the mentality this guy has. So don't give me DRC has to man up because you're wrong. Okay? So I'm sorry, but I got to tell you that. You're wrong. This guy's a gamer.
Yeah. And he's been on the injury report every week this season. First the IT band, hamstring, ankle, quad.
Yeah.
And he manages to go out there every week and gets it done. And that's what you need in the NFL. You need guys that are willing to play hurt. Obviously, you can't play injured, but playing hurt is a part of the game. And having played 12 years in the NFL at left tackle, where you make your living in the trenches, you're not 100% after week one. And sometimes you're not even 100% because of a nagging training camp injury. So,
all right, Eli, so we clarified that for you. And I hope we can move forward with that because I don't want that that misnomer getting out there about this guy.
Yeah.
He's getting good money. He's getting good money, and he wants to earn it, okay?
Yeah, I'm not. I mean, you're right. I mean, I'm not saying I love DRC. I'm not saying he's playing slack. He's just not doing what he needs to do.
But when you said he's got to man up, that has implications. That's not a nice phrase to say about a guy who's basically giving you everything he's got. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
That's all.
I have two other quick questions. One, to start for Rashad James. But what's the whole thing with Rashad James? I remember like 2 weeks ago he had interviews and he felt. He didn't feel as bad. He thought it was. He was talking about how he was trying to play against the Cowboys.
Right.
He's trying to play as quick as he can, but
he wanted to play against the Colts.
Right,
right. No, I look. He's trying to get back. Roman said at the top of the show, this is clearly a bit more of a serious MCL sprain than what we thought. Can I let you go, Eli? Is that your last point?
Yeah, that's my last one.
All right, because I want to get Roman in on this. Thank you so much for the phone call. 201-939-4513 is our number here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Roman, the Giants are a very conservative organization medically.
Right.
Dr. Warren, Russell Warren, who's been around here for almost as long as I have,
right.
I think. I'm here 32 years. I think Russ is maybe 30 years, 29 years. My point is this. The Giants really do defer to the medical staff when it comes down to injured players. And you know this. You played in a number of organizations.
Mm-hmm.
Every organization has a different approach as to how much they value the medical staff's opinion and who gets the final say as to if that player is available or not. Could you explain to the fans the difference on how the Giants, with their conservative and health-first approach, really look to the medical staff beyond anybody else?
Well, I think it's really about the concern of the life of a player and not just the football part, because the football part only lasts so long. You go back to John Beeson, for example. All the extra trips that he took to just make sure he was medically okay, all the specialists that he saw, that was the request of the team. And I've been on teams where your agent has to step in and say, all right, you need a second opinion. You don't trust a team doctor. I mean, there's, you know, in the old days, and I'm talking 10 years ago, there was a general distrust for team doctors, team medical staff, because the head coach wanted you to play no matter what, and sometimes at the expense and the detriment of your own health. This organization does not operate this way, and I have a lot of respect for the medical staff. You talked about Russ Warren. Oh, he did my first knee scope in 1999. Ronnie Barnes, Steve
sure.
Kennelly, Byron,
all those guys.
All those guys, they're amongst the best in the league in terms of how they evaluate players. And they will not jeopardize your life and the career of your life physically to go play a football game. This organization cares a lot more about the individual than just the football part of it. Obviously, we measure ourselves by the games that we win and lose. But again, John Beeson, and I said this in week three, you don't want him to come out there at the expense of missing the rest of the season or missing more time. Obviously, he was a guy, because he knew that they cared about him, he kept wanting to go out. Because Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie knows that this organization cares about his health, his body, they'd rather pull him and say, hey, sit. That's going to make you want to go play. And as a player, I want a guy who cares about me, cares about my life, cares about my
sure
family, my long-term health. That's the team I'm going to want to practice for when I'm not feeling it one day. When I wake up and it's week 12, I mean, that's the team you want to play for. I mean, you're going to run through the wall, and use that expression, run through a wall. You're going to run through a wall for a head coach or a team that has that approach. The other approach was the old way, and that was probably 80% of the league at one point. That way doesn't work, because – if a player feels like he's a piece of meat and he's expendable, he won't give you his best effort. He won't care. It's just like any job or any employee relationship. You've got to show that people that work for you, that you care about them. And that's why the Giants historically have led the charge in terms of their medical staff, how they evaluate injuries, how they respond, who really makes that final decision. And that's why I believe, you know, having had played for four games, not because we work for the Giants, having played for four different teams, rather than four
you know.
Games. Yeah, I know 100%.
That's why I wanted to ask you, 100%. Because people need to hear this.
Right.
Dr. Warren ultimately has the final say. And if he says, okay, medically, we're okay with that player playing, well, now it's up to the player and the coach to talk about it, see how they feel about it strategically or what they think they can or cannot do. But if Dr. Warren says, no go, that's it. That's it. You're out. You're not playing Sunday. There's no more conversation.
Right.
Done. That's what the Giants do. Herb from Philadelphia, you're next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hello.
Hey, guys. Great program.
Thank you.
How you doing?
Good to talk
good,
to you.
Good. What you got?
Yeah, great. Just had to ask a question. It seems like our offensive and defensive line physicality has changed a bit. And we used to be a little bit more physical. I don't know what it is. It's just maybe what I'm seeing. I'm not a player, so I just had to ask. And protecting Eli, you know, he's such a good quarterback. I just wanted to know about those three things. Thank you.
Okay,
yeah,
Robin.
Herb, that's something that I've spoken with that subject matter a lot. You know, we talk about what happened Monday night. Michael Strahan gets his Ring of Honor. I mean, sorry, his Hall of Fame ring.
Right.
And, you know, seeing Sean O'Hara and some of the older guys that I played with.
Richie Seibert was there, too.
Yeah, Richie Seibert was there, McKenzie.
Yep.
And even Jason Whittle. I mean, a guy like Jason Whittle, who came in off the street from Missouri State and just maximized his abilities.
Yeah.
I mean, that's indicative of this organization, but it's indicative of what it took to be a good offensive lineman. And the physicality of that was paramount. And I know football's changed. I know it's become about matchups, and I know it's become about other things other than just wanting to put your hand on the ground in a three-point stance and just dominating the guy in front of you. Let's start with the defensive line. When this defensive line of the Giants was at their peak, at the prime years.
Tuck, O.C., and Stray, those guys.
Tuck, O.C., Stray, you know, Tuck was younger. I mean, you had six, seven guys that could start for anybody. I mean, you had guys that would hunt, that were relentless, and you can get to the quarterback with four people, and that helped the coverage. That helped the linebackers. Well,
that's what Spags predicated everything on.
Offensive line. When I first got here, and I'm sitting in a meeting room with, you know, Brian Williams, Ron Stone, who just came from
Dallas.
From Dallas. Scott Gregg was a second-year guy. I was a year behind him. He was a younger guy. We weren't a great offensive line back then, but we worked ourselves to become a good offensive line. We worked ourselves the 97 season to win the division for the first time since, you know, God knows when.
And they ran the ball real well that year. Remember Charles
Way? Yeah,
we
ran the ball with Charles Way, Gary Brown, Rodney Hampton.
Yeah.
I think Tiki was a rookie.
Pounding that rock.
Yeah. Tyrone Wheatley, I think, had a couple yards as well. It was about our system, but we wanted to win. We wanted to move guys from point A. And I know Coach Flax has this quote in his, I don't think his offensive line room, but you've got to be willing to move your man from point A to point B against his will consistently and monotonously.
I'm not sure where you're going with that one.
In a monotonous fashion, just day in and day out. In the fourth quarter, you impose your will on your opponent. And at the end of the season, December and January, you're imposing your will. That's how great offensive lines were built. That's how it was done in Pittsburgh. That's how it was done in Kansas City when they had good offensive lines. That's how it's been done the 49ers, the teams that are physical. Some of that I'm not seeing from this offensive line, just some of it. There's been enough criticism about John Jerry at right guard about him being more a finesse pass-blocking guy than an actual right guard that's 340 pounds that's going to just line in front of a guy and destroy a three technique. We haven't seen that.
Love to see it, but I don't think we will because he's been in this league a while and he hasn't shown it.
Yeah, and that's a direct result of Andre Williams or Peyton Hillis or Michael Cox or Jennings when he comes back getting to and through the line of scrimmage without initial contact, giving you second and three, second and fours. I mean, that's what needs to happen.
Yeah.
And the defensive line, you've got to be able to get to the quarterback rushing four people. And it starts with being physical. And thank you, Herb, for the phone call. I mean, he's right. You can tell on the television copy, when an offensive line, a defense line is dominating.
Oh, you
can see the surge. You can see the push.
You don't need the end zone copy to see that.
You can see the quarterback's getting uncomfortable. You can see when a quarterback's scared, when he in shotgun, he's looking around at this protection versus looking downfield at his progressions. So
we
hope that they can continue to – I mean, you got half a season done, and every guy to a man has to make a decision about who they want this to be, who they want this thing to be.
All right, Ernest from Bridgeport, you're next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Ernest. How are you?
Yeah, all right, fine yourself.
Oh, we're doing real well. What can we do for you today?
I had called, but I was talking about this yesterday, but what I was calling about is that the offensive line, like Romano was saying, is playing, is not really playing with consistency. But
I
am concerned, though, about two things. I think that they should try a change of back also. I think Andre Williams is a good power back. I know that McAdoo came from the Green Bay Packers, and he's trying to emulate, you know, the Eddie Lacy. He's a power back, so he's coming into him with the power game. But he's a rookie, and it's not really working out because that offensive line was the starting offensive line from the beginning of the season. Jennings ran behind that offensive line pretty well, the same offensive line.
Well, Ernest, to be fair, I hear where you're going. I hear where you're going. But to be fair, Ernest, he's a rookie. And rookies sometimes don't have the patience. They don't set up their blocks well. They don't follow their blockers as well as they're supposed to. And quite honestly, sometimes what Andre Williams has done, and Roman, you can back me up on this, there have been times where the hole hasn't been there and Andre Williams literally tried to push his way or muscle his way through because at Boston College, maybe he could run over a defensive tackle or a defensive end or a linebacker at Boston College. He tries to do that here, and guess what? He's going in the other direction for a one-yard loss.
Well, he can do it when he's got momentum. You know? I've seen Andre Williams. We saw it last week. Run a stretch play, zone, get to the sideline. Now you've got, you know, 10 yards of momentum going, and then you're punishing a cornerback or a safety
right.
that comes
but
up.
I'm saying on times when the blocking isn't there, there are times where he's still trying to push his way through, and his might isn't going to get it done against these NFL kind of players.
And we know that Andre Brown isn't a Williams. Shifty. I mean, sorry, Andre Williams isn't a shifty guy. He's a meat and potatoes, blue collar, bring your lunch to work. I mean, he's that type of a
absolutely.
Bat. And he's going to run the way. But when the line's blocking, when they're being physical, look, I blocked for Mike Allstott, LaDainian Tomlinson, Tiki Barber, Michael Pittman. I mean, some backs were better than others. Some backs were great. Some you had to get a hat on the hat. Some you had to make sure you block your guy because you know this guy's going to give it his all. And I think that's part of one of my issues. When you know you've got big physical backs, it makes you want to go get the job done. It makes you want to stay on your blocks longer. Get to the second level because you know you've got 240 pounds of power and speed coming through the line of scrimmage, and that will demoralize the defensive line.
So, Ernest, I don't know if we explained it for you, but that's kind of what's happening right now. This isn't just on, like, Andre Williams because, like, oh, he's no good, but there are certain things that he's got to be able to not only experience so that he's better prepared to do this, but also that O-line's got to do a better job of helping him out. 100%. They really do.
Okay. Yeah, but now, okay, and I understand that. You have explained that well. But it's just two other things I wanted to just ask.
Sure.
Why not try a experienced guy like a Michael Cox? And you know, and to be fair with that, they should give Corey Washington a chance to go out there. He's a rookie. So they should give him the same chance because you have players that are dropping balls. Why not give him the same chance that they given Andre Williams?
Okay, Ernest.
And they should try out Michael Cox if they're seeing that the rookie's not handling it right yet, because he is going to be a real good back, but I think he's not there yet. So in the meantime, until they get that experience, they should use him in situational.
Ernest, I understand, and that would have been the primary objective, but they kind of had to rush him into the number one role when Jennings went down. I mean, there was just no other way to go. It's like sometimes you got to force feed a kid and say, look, it's time. We can't wait for you.
Yeah, and you went
we're going to let you go, but
I mean,
we'll come
in. Ernest,
we're going to let you go. We're going to let you go, but please stay on the computer. We'll comment, okay?
Thank you so much.
Right. Go ahead.
Okay.
First of all, I'm not answering any more Corey Washington questions.
I'll do it.
Yeah, please.
You take care of Michael Cox. I'll take care of Corey Washington.
I almost
Washington.
Became Mike Francesa yesterday, berating a caller.
All right, go about Michael Cox. Go ahead.
Look, Michael Cox at the beginning of the season was put on practice squad.
Right.
So for a guy that had been here for two seasons, he allowed an Andre Williams to come in and play outperform him in training camp. That's on Michael Cox. That's not on the coaching staff. I've had coaches say, hey, you cut yourself. You decide if you make the team, not us.
Right.
So make it hard for us if you're a guy that's on the bubble. So Michael Cox has been, you know, reinserted back into the
53
as a returner primarily.
Yes.
But this season started with Andre Williams and Rashard Jennings as the one and two back.
And Hillis is the three.
They weren't
going to keep anymore.
Yeah, and that was determined come out of training camp. So I don't – again – and I understand the fans' perspective and the fans' viewpoint about certain aspects and looking at it from the outside. And you and I are in the building all the time, and I play, and I understand all that. And I'm always very sensitive and delicate to how I balance those views based on the different perspectives. But if you win the battles at the line of scrimmage, the holes will be there. You've got big, physical, downhill backs that can get the job done in that 3.5 to 4.5 yards per carry. I mean, the saddest part for me was Eli Manning had the longest run of the game last week, an 18-yard scamper when they were playing a soft cover two,
right?
And playing prevent. I mean, that's the longest. I wish that would have been a draw to a running back who's a lot more fast and athletic than Eli Manning that should be running the ball that could have turned that into a 20 or 30-yard run.
I get you.
So, again, this can't keep being about – we have to have more intelligent conversations than let's just give another guy another chance.
Who's
on practice squad at the beginning of the season.
To big piggyback, though, Michael Cox is a quicks guy. He's not a power guy. He's not a downhill runner. He's not a between-the-tackles runner. He's a quicks guy who needs some space to operate. And if your offensive line is having trouble blocking, he's not going to get the space to operate.
Yeah,
so it doesn't suit his style.
Right. And I've said this. Cox is a big back.
That's an issue.
That runs like a shiftier, smaller back.
Right.
You had
a
guy like Ahmad Bradshaw.
He's a quicks guy.
Who's a small back, but he runs big.
Yes.
So it's
styles are important here.
Exactly.
Okay, styles are important. As far as Washington, here's what I will say, and Roman and I disagree on this. I personally believe if the guys in front of you are not getting it done, you have nothing to lose by putting Corey Washington in. Now, I agree with Roman in one regard, and that is the guy was the number five wide receiver on the team for a reason. He made the team in preseason. You know, he proved he deserved to be on the 53, but that doesn't mean he can go up against number ones in the NFL and produce the same kind of numbers he did during August. I totally get that, and I agree with Roman about that.
I don't think Corey Washington would succeed against
Richard Sherman, for example. That'd be a pretty tough matchup. But here's what I will say.
Not the fade corner routes in the end zone that all the fans want, but in terms of from the field, blocking, run, being a gunner.
You got to do everything.
I don't think Corey Washington at this point is able to do that.
And I understand that, and Tom Coughlin is always of the belief that, especially as a rookie, you have to prove certain things in practice before you get to earn your snaps on Sunday. So I understand all of that. My biggest problem right now, and Jeff Fegels and I were talking about this in the press box on Sunday, and that is when the receivers you have at the moment are not producing and they're not getting the job done and they're not executing, you have nothing to lose by throwing Corey Washington out there and saying, hey, you know what, let's just give him a couple. Because here's the problem. You've got these veterans who don't produce. For example, Preston Parker had three drops in the second quarter alone, okay? If he can do that and then doesn't get threatened by sitting on the bench and doesn't get told, hey, we're going to give the rookie an opportunity to outplay you and take your job, well, then Preston Parker has no fear of God in him. And sometimes what has to happen with a veteran who does not play well, he needs to fear that there's somebody behind him to, at the very least, push him to keep his job.
Right.
And so I'm of the opinion that Corey Washington should get some reps, if for no other reason than to give him an opportunity to show what he can do and maybe push somebody else, even if he doesn't win the job.
Right.
They finally got him some reps in the fourth quarter. He caught four passes and caught a touchdown pass. Quite frankly, I think that's the kind of thing that some of these other receivers need to see.
Right.
That Corey Washington, guess what? We threw him the ball and he did something with it. How about you other guys do it too?
Right. And that speaks volumes to a veteran. And I'll just chime in real quickly, Paul. I'm not sure, actually, I'm pretty positive that there could be a circumstance where it's the middle of the second quarter and you see Corey Washington coming in a package, and if he runs his route and he's open, he's going to get a ball thrown to him because he's live.
And from what we've seen, he'll probably catch it.
He's got good hands. He can catch. But I think in terms of the philosophy on the sideline shouldn't be, okay, it's been 15 plays on offense. Corey Washington hasn't caught a ball. Let's get him in and throw the ball to him. No, that's not how football works.
No, no. You're not going to go in with the game plan with a whole Corey Washington chapter.
No,
you're not going to do
won't.
That.
It
and
I,
you're right. Some fans
chance,
want that. And that's
been
not
play,
realistic.
There have been games where Corey Washington was in. He ran around, didn't get the ball. He gets off the field. They punt the ball. I mean, that's happened.
Sure.
So, I mean, all these fans that are saying Corey Washington should get more opportunities, he's gotten opportunities. But, again, it's in practice. How is he practicing? How is he studying? How is he doing on the mental part of studying defenses? In terms of special teams, when it's time to be a gunner.
Well,
is he the first in line to try to be a gunner to earn more playing time? We don't know that.
Now, again, understand this, and I am, again, I'm on the side of get him in there for some more snaps and see what he can do with them like he did in the fourth quarter the other day. I'm all for that. But understand this, too. He is not the magical Jerry Rice that you're going to plop into the Giants huddle and suddenly win them three games in a row. That's not going to happen either.
2010 Victor Cruz
And quite frankly, there's also a chance, folks. You want to see a lot of Corey Washington. What if he does get in there in the first quarter? And on 3rd and 7, he runs it in, and Eli throws it out. Because Corey Washington's a rookie,
right,
hasn't had enough playing time, hasn't had enough experience, runs the wrong route, and gets Eli picked. So understand, there's going to be good with the bad if you force feed him into the lineup. Okay? Again, I'd get him in there.
Because starting receivers have made that mistake too now.
Sure they have.
Cruz,
so,
Ruben Randall, those guys have made the same
mistake. He is Corey Washington. He's not Jerry Rice.
Right.
We do need to understand that, okay? Listeners are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site where it's like a new season every time you play. Hurry, get free entry into this $100,000 fantasy football contest this weekend where first place takes home 10 grand. Head to DraftKings.com now and enter Code Blue to play for free. DraftKings.com, bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter Blue for free entry now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. Paul Dottino and Roman Oben with you on Big Blue Kickoff Live, 201-939-4513. And Dre from Atlanta, you are next on the show. Hello.
Hey, Paulie. Hey, Roman.
Hi.
Hey, Dre.
Hey, Paulie, you hit it right on the head, and I think that's what the disconnect is with everyone. You know, there is not that player behind, you know, hungry that's pushing the starters. You know, I'm going to fight. I'm going to keep my job. I'm not going to let a rookie or a lesser quality player take my position. And it seems like everyone on the offensive line is underachieving because there's not that fear. Now, maybe Schwartz is not really at 100% pushing anybody, or Snyder is really doesn't have a grasp of the playbook. But this, when I played ball, there was a level of fear because there was somebody behind me hungrier.
Right.
So I played way beyond my skill set to make sure that I stood out and make sure I played better than the guy on the other side of the field. You know, so it made us better. It should be an internal competition. You
now,
know,
Dre,
Ruben Randall should be trying to play better than Odell Beckham and vice versa.
Agree,
everyone
totally
should be trying to play better.
Dre, here's the interesting part, and I'm going to use the word here because I think it's an important, important word. And I believe what happens sometimes when veterans don't do well and they don't get any push from somebody behind them on the depth chart, there is that word complacency that gets involved. And what you have is a player who just says, okay, this is acceptable because they're not going to do anything to me. They're not going to pull me off the field. I've got nothing to worry about. Apparently, this is acceptable to the coach. And he can talk to me all he wants, but if he's not going to yank my butt onto the bench, and that's the danger with the Tom Coughlin philosophy of rookies have to earn it in practice before they get their reps on Sunday. Because if I'm a veteran, okay, and I'm not doing the job real well on Sunday, but I look at the guy behind me on the depth chart, and he's a rookie who's dropping passes in practice, and he's lollygagging it or whatever the case may be.
He doesn't get the mental
stuff. He doesn't get the mental stuff back. I know. Guess what? Coach says he's got to earn the reps. He's not earning the reps. What am I afraid of? And that's the danger in Coach Coughlin's philosophy. Now, I agree with Coach Coughlin on almost everything. I'm old school, okay? I'm 75. I don't look it, but I am. No, not really. But I am old school, okay? Remember, I came in under Bill Parcells and George Young, so I am old school. I get Tom Coughlin's philosophy, and for the most part, I agree with it. But I also think there comes a time where, you know what, that philosophy can burn you because of complacency.
Right.
And that's where I think the Giants are right now with a couple of these players.
But you know what? Since it seems like complacency has already set in, nothing hits the ego more than you to pull them for someone who he may feel is a lesser player. And once they shine, that's when you see the hungriness come back in and they'll fight in practice and try to get back on the field. But there's none of that. I think there needs to be a shakeup. I think, you know, if you can't perform, sit. You know, you're not totally taking that person's position away. They did it with Brown.
Well,
You're right.
And there are a couple of things you can do. You could take snaps away from the veteran, or you could bench him out of the starting lineup and then maybe insert him into the second quarter and see if that lights a fire under him.
Yeah, and while we're on the subject, Paul, you know, and there's no secret here, you know, Adrian Robinson, James Brewer. I mean, these are guys that should be pushing the starters. Or should be starting themselves.
I don't see it.
Should be.
They're not.
That's it. Should be.
Yeah, but they're not.
And I'm sure there's two or three other guys that I could name.
You know.
But
I mean, don't you think if Adrian Robinson was really, really any good, that he would have moved his way up the depth chart instead of being number 3 at the tight end spot by now? Tom Coughlin opened it up and said at the beginning of training camp, the tight end position's wide open. I'm looking for somebody to step forward and take the job. Adrian Robinson didn't do it. That's on him.
He had a 4th and 16 catch against the Indianapolis Colts in a preseason game when they'd played, 20, 30 yards deep. You know, it was great, and he slammed the ball or whatever he did. He was really excited. I even remember that catch he made. And he said, hey,
and he also had a couple drops in the preseason, too.
This is something that this kid needs, maybe. But, fourth-year guys who haven't done it. I mean, you are who you are by your third year in the league.
Dre, thanks for the call. I want Roman to finish on this. Go ahead.
I had a guy who backed me up when I was a young starter by the name of Toby Miles. I think you remember Toby Miles.
Yes, later on played for the Rams.
Yeah, played for the Rams, played for the Raiders. He was meeting with Cleveland for half a season, bounced around for 5-6 years. You know, good kid. And I remember when it was like mid-season, he's like, man, you never get injured, man. You never get anything. I'm never going to play. I'm like, whether you play or not, it's not because of me. It's because of you.
Right.
And
earn it.
And I think that comment kind of suspended, left him kind of dazed about how he's going to react to that.
He was a journeyman. Never amounted to much.
Yeah, well, again, coaches have said a lot of different things. And, one thing, John Gruden said this, when I was in Tampa. He's like, for rookies are rookies. Second-year players need to step up. But you are who you are by your third year in the league.
You have to be.
You are who you are. That
because
starter,
of free agency, you have
pro
to be.
Pro bowler, backup, not serious, didn't pan out, rookie, mm-hmm. first-round bust, whatever. You are who you are by your third year in the league. I'll let that comment breathe.
I'm with you. and I'll tell you something else, too. If you have a veteran who underperforms and you do what you can with your scheme or with practice to try to get him coached up and that doesn't work, well, now the only thing you can do is start taking snaps away, and that has to affect his pride. And if he doesn't get ticked off by losing snaps or by losing his job in the starting lineup.
Who are you talking about?
Whoever it is. Then it's time to say goodbye. Because at the first opportunity you can open up that escape hatch, it's time that that player goes to somebody else's team. Because you don't want him on your roster. It's that simple.
Yep.
All right.
One more call, maybe get some Twitter.
We got nobody on the calls. Okay, that's fine. We'll go to Twitter. We got plenty of those. We always have plenty of Twitters, Roman. I don't get to them enough because I like to hang with the callers. They like to get back to us. Big Show says, he likes the point I made about Corey Washington. Well, I'm just trying to tell it as it is, folks. That's all there is to it.
One thing about you, you're always going to be honest, Paul.
Yeah, you know that. Mario Alba Jr. says, who will Richard Sherman guard this week, Randall or Beckham? The Seahawks play straight up. Yeah, they don't shadow.
Yeah, he stays on one side of the field, so he could get both, actually.
Well, that's what's going to wind up happening.
Yeah.
Because whoever happens to be on that side, he gets. I mean, again, they play straight up. They're not afraid of anybody, and they're not going to shadow anybody. That's just not what the Seahawks do. So it's whoever lines up on his side. Let's see here. Paul Cush Jr. says to both of us, the Giants will get crushed by mobile quarterbacks. What will make Sunday any different? Remember, Russell Wilson leads NFL quarterbacks this year in rushing at over 390 yards on the ground this year.
Right.
So how do you deal with that?
Well, one, you've got to tackle beast mode, Marshawn Lynch. And you've got to put Russell Wilson in a position to be in these long third down passing where he's got to sit there in that pocket and get rid of the football. Because, again, Doug Baldwin is the only truly receiver threat they have. I mean, they're going to play conservative. They're going to run the football. They're going to try to pound it. They're going to try to make you tackle Marshawn Lynch. And Russell Wilson has the ability to escape and run and create plays with his legs and with his arms. So this is where you got to play smart. You got to play tough defense.
I'm going to give you a little bit of an insight here to a meeting we had with the NFL officials during the offseason last year. I'm not one who likes these option quarterbacks and these rollout quarterbacks, the Kaepernicks and the Wilsons. No, they're not my style. I will never want those guys on my team. But here's what I asked one of the officials. I said, you know what? What if I told my defensive players, and on every one of those quarterback rollouts, I told one of my guys, you make sure you drill him. And I mean drill him hard. Within the integrity of the rules.
Right.
But you get a hat on him every single time he rolls out. You make sure that somebody follows through and gets a hat on him and knocks him down. Well, as long as you don't do it you know, spearing or kind of, you know, or late, as long as you get there in time, he's going to feel that.
Well,
okay, and I don't care how many times he dishes the ball off to Lynch on his rollout. You make him pay for every time he rolls out. And I said this about RG3, and teams have done that. And look what RG3's career has turned into, one injury-riddled mess.
Well, you go back to the Baltimore Ravens 49ers Super Bowl from 2 years ago. You look at the rushing yards that Colin Kaepernick had in the championship game. But when he played that Ravens defense, he wasn't running the ball at all. He was getting rid of it because he knew Suggs and those guys were gonna light him up.
These guys, these roaming rushing quarterbacks, their entire weaponry is based on the fact that they're on the move. So what you do is you make them pay for it.
Yeah.
It's just that simple. All right. That'll do it, Roman. Folks, Monday to Friday, 12 noon to 1 o'clock, Big Blue Kickoff Live is right here on Giants.com. Write the number down, 201-939-4513. Tomorrow, it's another show. I believe Jeff Fiegels, am I not right? Jeff Fiegels and John Schmelk, I believe, take the phones tomorrow. And then Sunday, it's the Giants and Seahawks out in the Big West. For Roman Oben, I'm Paul Tatino. We'll see you next time on Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Oh, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go, let's go.
Got the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.